Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from September 20th, 1995.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you all good morning across much of the nation, or good evening as the case may be moving west. Actually, coverage from the Tahitian and Hawaiian Islands to the U.S. Virgin Islands in the Caribbean, St. Thomas specifically, covering all the islands. And if you all are with us this morning, I would appreciate, as a matter of fact, I will for a time. I've got a feeling you're probably not with us, but I want to try it. The U.S. Virgin Islands, specifically St. Thomas, have been absolutely decimated by, as you know, by a hurricane. Now, I'm going to open my first-time caller line right now to anybody in the U.S. Virgin Islands. So if you guys are back up and in biz yet, we'd like to get a call from you. We know some telephone communications was to be restored today, and I would like to get a report. I've got a lot of listeners out there, relatives in the Virgin Islands, and they'd like word, and I would like word. So if you're in the U.S. Virgin Islands, call us at area code 702-727-1222. If anybody out there hears this and is able to get out on the phones, which I kind of doubt, once again, it's area code 702-727-1222. We'd sure like to know how you all are doing. So that, when our affiliate is on the air, is our eastern limit, down into South America and north, we believe, fully to the North Pole. Now, we're going to have a guest this evening. He's going to be a very interesting guest. His name is Larry Wilson. And I guess I would like to begin by warning people that if the kind of material we're going to... Larry believes that a couple of comets are going to be within a few short years plowing into Earth, to put it bluntly. If this kind of material disturbs you, this would probably be the right time for you to tune out. I won't mind. I don't want to disturb you. I don't want to scare you. And so I'm issuing this little warning right up front. Now, let me do this. Let me tell you, and I don't know why it is, when I do these kinds of programs, I get this kind of news. I hope I don't bring it on. There were two significant earthquakes today. One of them, quite significant, I think 5.8, located about 100 miles north of Los Angeles. Another in Central California, about 10 miles north of Ridgecrest. And so there is a very serious amount of sudden earthquake activity going on. And it will relate to some degree to what we're going to talk about. Now, we are about to have the worst hurricane season in all of history. If we have one more storm, it will tie and then surpass all of recorded history with regard to hurricanes. Now, you've heard Gordon Michael Scallion and the direction that he comes from, I think, and you will hear him again on the program. But this morning, a different angle. And a lot of people who are biblically oriented, religiously oriented, tend to come after the Gordon Michael Scallions and say, false prophet, false prophet. This morning's guest bases a lot of what he's going to say on the Bible itself, and I'll tell you more about Larry Wilson in just one moment. So it's going to be a very interesting program, but if this kind of thing freaks you out, then you should go away to Happy Talk somewhere.
Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
So, let me tell you a little bit about Larry. And this comes from, I guess, his newsletter, or a newsletter. We'll find out. But his story. Since February of 94, I followed the phenomenon of near-Earth objects, NEOs, crashing into our planet. The reaction of the SP Directorate, I'm not sure what that is, where I'm currently employed, and others has crossed the spectrum from sheer disbelief to almost absolute hysteria. I have tracked the mission of the Clementine satellite, which was tasked to map and photograph the moon's surface, and then conduct a flyby of cataloged asteroid Geographos, is it? Geographos, I guess, 1620, that satellite, or that rock, I guess it's a rock, which is 2 kilometers in diameter, is classified an Apollo-class asteroid that orbits the sun in the same manner as Earth. Needless to say, after successfully mapping the moon on Saturday, 7 March 94, Clementine spun out of orbit, never did rendezvous with Geographos. Later, in April of 94, an asteroid, estimated at 22 yards in diameter, crossed between the halfway point of the moon and the Earth, which caused many space watchers from around the world to take a second look at this possible threat from the skies. In other words, we had a near miss. I later learned this chunk of rock was made of iron. It was estimated that if this body would have crashed into the Earth, the energy released from the explosion would have equaled 3 times the bomb dropped on Hiroshima, Japan. Now, I'm going to let him tell the rest of the story. Quite a bit of Earth movement, and an interesting time to bring on board Larry Wilson. And by the way, I've got a big announcement coming up at midnight. So, Larry, welcome to the program. Here you are.
Well, thank you, Art, and good morning to all of your listeners.
Where are you, by the way?
I'm in Texas.
Texas?
Yes, sir.
Well, we're in Texas. All right, good. This is pretty frightening stuff. What is it that you think is going to happen, Larry, and when is it going to happen, and what will it do?
Well, Art, in a nutshell, I've come to the conclusion that there is an end to the world as we know it, and the events that lead up to the end and the establishment of God's kingdom, there are a series or a sequence of events described in the book of Revelation, as I have come to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Let me go back a little ways and tell you that in 1988, I concluded that the Earth was going to be impacted by a binary pair, asteroid impacts.
Larry, these are incredible statements, and I've been neglectful. I probably should have done it. I don't know that I've got a good, strict bio on you. What is your background?
Well, at that time, I was working for a large hospital in the Dayton, Ohio area. My specialty was in the area of health and health promotion and health improvement, and
well, that's a long way from comets crashing out here. So how did you get
well? I have been a serious Bible student for several years, and in my spare time, I've just been a curious investigator.
Okay.
Of the prophecies, particularly.
Mm-hmm.
I know that a lot of people have examined the prophecies of Revelation and thrown up their hands in despair, but I like puzzles and I like mysteries, and
I do
so
too.
I just, you know, hung in there, and one day the lights sort of all came on and the picture seemed to come together.
Mm-hmm. Have you written a book? Do you have a newsletter? How are you disseminating information other than perhaps through a program like this?
Yes, I've written several books.
Oh.
One of them that is titled Warning, Revelation is About to be Fulfilled. And I also publish a monthly newsletter called Daystar.
Say that again?
I publish a monthly newsletter called Daystar.
Daystar.
Yes.
All right. Daystar. Huh. That's interesting.
It's kind of ironic, isn't it?
Well, I've had a lot of people on, Larry, of varying cuts. One of them, the one that has impressed me the most to date, was Gordon Michael Scallion.
Yes, I'm acquainted with some of his work.
I can imagine. And what chills me is when I have people on like him or you now saying it seems to me virtually the same thing, but coming at it from a different perspective. Now, when you have Gordon Michael Scallion on, the people who are religious will call in extremely angry, even though he's got an 87% accuracy rating or whatever, and I've been tracking them, as a matter of fact. They call in angry, and they say, look, even if he was as good as 99%, you know, the Bible says he is a false prophet. And all who make predictions are false prophets.
Well, Art, I've been called a false prophet for a long time, so
oh.
I'm in good company.
Oh, you too, huh?
All right. In 1988, when I began espousing my views that the Bible predicts two asteroid impacts, one specifically in an ocean and another on a landmass, a continent, people ridiculed me and told me that I was nuts and that the only rocks that out there were in my head.
In your head, huh? Where do you find, and I don't like Bible scripture quoting, but
right.
I suppose it'll be somewhat unavoidable, because I've got to ask you where in the Bible you find support for what you're saying.
Okay. In Revelation chapter 8,
yep.
There's a statement starting in verse 8. It talks, or verse 9, actually. No, I said it right, verse 8 here. It says, the second angel sounded his trumpet, and something like a huge mountain, all ablaze, was thrown into the sea. And then in verse 10, the third angel sounded his trumpet, and a great star, blazing like a torch, fell from the sky.
Fell from the sky, into the earth.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it affects a third of the rivers and the springs of water. And the Bible goes on to say that as a result of the second impact, that the water becomes poisonous or contaminated, and many people drink the water and die.
All right. You've got a timeline roughly attached, don't you?
Yes.
On what basis do you do that? Is it not traditional that no man shall know the time?
No man knows the day or the hour of Christ's return. That's a foregone conclusion.
Well, how does a man know about the trumpets that have begun to blow?
Well, Bible prophecy operates as a continuum. You have a beginning point, and you have an ending point, and there is a methodical way to lay out each of the elements to see where you are in this continuum, and this prophetic continuum has been already in process for 25 centuries. So it's not like you just jump into the middle of reality one day and say, "Hey, here we are." In reality, the way it works is that you begin to examine what has happened, how it was laid out, the architecture of prophecy, so that you can find your place in the great clock.
Mm-hmm. And, well, what does your great clock say with regard to these comets? I mean, this is a very non-trivial matter. When?
Sure. Well, my understanding is that we're in a window of time from 1994 until around the turn of the century, 1998, perhaps the year 2000, the turn of the millennium, you know.
Yes.
Somewhere in this time period, I expect these events to occur. Now, that doesn't mean that they will occur. That is just my anticipation.
What sort of comet do you expect to hit the ocean, which I believe you said would be the first? And
yes.
What effects generally would you expect that to produce?
When, in 1989, the National Geographic presented a series or an article on titled Extinctions, about the dinosaurs being, you know, eliminated from Earth by asteroids. I was surprised to find that studies and modeling studies done at the University of California at Berkeley conformed exactly to what John has described in Revelation. If a great asteroid, say a mile or two in diameter, were to impact the Pacific Ocean, traveling at 40,000 miles an hour...
Wait a minute. Hold that thought, would you?
Yes, sir.
We'll take a break here at the bottom of the hour. That's a great hook. He mentioned the dinosaurs, and I'll just briefly tell you that there is now a dinosaur, as of NBC News last night, to replace T-Rex. And guess what his name is? Gigantosaurus. Gigantosaurus. They have found the remains of what's called Gigantosaurus in Argentina. It is a 100-million-year-old animal. It was 40 feet long, weighed a total of 8 tons, according to Tom Brokaw, had 8-inch teeth, was, thank goodness, the biggest flesh-eating dinosaur ever to walk on two legs. And I believe that Gigantosaurus, T-Rex, and all of their smaller brethren are thought to have disappeared as a result of exactly what we're talking about and will be talking about this morning. Comets slamming into the Earth. In a moment, we'll find out what would happen from Larry Wilson if a comet, if and when a comet hits our ocean. We'll be right back.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. On this, Somewhere in Time. Take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back. I'm Art Bell, and this is the largest live overnight talk program in America. It's good to be here. Larry Wilson is my guest. We're going to take a shot at it from the biblical side in a moment. He's about to tell us what's going to happen if a comet should hit the ocean. We'll get to that in just a One moment.
Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
All right, Larry Wilson, back on the air again. Larry, I know you've done a lot of scientific research so that you know what you're saying is true. So go ahead and tell us, set up the scenario that you believe is so close.
Okay. Art, let me do this to tell your listeners that if they'll get a pencil handy, I'll be glad to give a copy of the little book that describes all of this as a complimentary gift.
Free?
Free. If they'll just call the office, we have people standing by even right now, and we'll be glad to give a free copy of the little book. Warning, Revelation is about to be fulfilled absolutely free without any obligation whatsoever. Just as a
way of saying. I think you better be careful. I've got a copy of that book here. It's let me see. It's 140 pages.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like it's cheap.
No.
So, I'm telling you. Be careful. Be careful what you say.
Well, we'll be glad to do it for as long as supplies last. And
yeah. All right.
Now back to the story.
All right.
There is a four trumpet sequence. Let me give it the larger picture and then go through the details. The first trumpet of Revelation sounds in Revelation 8, verse 7. And there is a meteoric firestorm of burning hail. So we have a cosmic catastrophe that causes global fires all over the world. And the Bible says a third of the trees and all the green grass was burned up. It's sort of like, if I understand it correctly, like our passing through the Leonid asteroid belt every November, December, and January.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, there is a meteoric firestorm that starts fires that are just unquenchable.
Meteors have been known to start fires.
Yes.
All right.
Then secondly, this is followed by a great asteroid impact upon the sea. And if an asteroid, a mile, or even half a mile in diameter, were to impact, let's say, the Pacific Ocean, it would create a tsunami that could be upwards of 3,000 feet high.
3,000 feet.
3,000.
Uh-huh.
The tsunami would literally wash away cities along the coasts of all the nations that rim the Pacific. And you could see that enormous, almost, well, it's beyond calculation, the amount of devastation that would occur.
There's no way you could know where it would fall, though. It could fall in the Atlantic.
That's correct.
And it would go over Florida like a big old tidal wave.
That's correct. Well, if it hit the Gulf of Mexico,
that'd be bad, too.
The tidal wave, according to some research, would reach as far inland as Kansas City because of our relatively flat plain.
Uh-huh.
Interestingly, the Bible says that a third of the ships of the sea were destroyed as a result of this impact. Then the third event is a asteroid impact that strikes a landmass and shears the tectonic structure, causing with the ground waves, it shears the septic system, the buried waste, and other leaching fields are broken up so that the great aquifers beneath the cities of that continent are contaminated, and people drink the water and many perished as a result. This is not, you know, I really don't like to believe what I understand, if you know what I'm saying.
And you believe this is in the near term, don't you?
Yes, I do.
In other words, prior to 2000.
Yes, that's correct. And my objective, and I am deeply appreciative to you for two reasons. One, for the opportunity of being on your show to share what I've come to understand. But secondly, I appreciate very much that you have been diligent, I believe, in trying to get people to look at a larger picture and to consider the findings of science and others who are trying to say something about the events that are before us.
Well, I'm diligent pursuing information in this area, and I am disquieted by the similar nature of the Gordon Michael Scallions, the Larry Wilsons, and so many others who come from so many different directions. Yours is the Bible, but seem to conclude roughly the same thing.
Yeah.
To me, that is very disquieting.
Yeah. In 1989, a fellow by the name of Henry Holt, out at the U.S. Geological Survey in Flagstaff.
Yes, sir.
He discovered what was later named asteroid 1989 FC. It was a near miss of 6 hours.
Six hours?
Yes.
That is near.
It gives new meaning to near-Earth objects.
How big was it?
Well, there was some debate on its actual size, but some concluded that it could have been, you know, 300 meters across, 1,000 feet in diameter.
Uh-huh.
Well, these things come at us so fast, and there are so many of them, that it's impossible to track them all and to see them all, because in space, a asteroid 1 mile in diameter is so tiny compared to the distances and the span involved that it's truly the needle in the haystack.
Well, I guess it is, because my recollection is, and maybe you can answer why, but I've been in talk radio for years, and it was a couple of years ago, I guess. We had a couple of near misses. The Associated Press reported on them, and the interesting thing was there were very near misses, and they said they reported it after the fact. In other words, we just had a very near miss. In both cases, it was reported the next day or the next week.
Yeah.
And it was obvious if they knew it was coming and was going to be close. Well, it was obvious they didn't. Or maybe not so obvious, or maybe they weren't sure, they saw it and weren't sure, and did not say anything for fear of panicking people. Well, I don't know, one of the above.
Yes. You know, one only has to look at the moon, and remembering that one face of the moon always is toward the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
The Earth, the moon rotates on its axis in such a way that we always see the same side of the moon. And the side that we can see is obviously pockmarked with thousands of meteor craters.
Yes.
Now, that to me has always been disquieting for the reason that we're looking at the side that's always toward us, so that would indicate that in many of these impacts, they've had to have missed Earth and hit the moon.
That seems unreasonable. In other words, might it not be true that the Earth experienced just as many as the moon in ancient times, but because we have air and atmosphere, we have hills and valleys and Grand Canyons and who knows, impact areas that simply are not recognized any longer as impact areas.
Well, David Morrison calculates. David Morrison is the director out at the Ames Research Center.
Yes, sir.
For NASA. he and other scientists calculate that somewhere on the order of 100 tons of space debris enters our atmosphere daily.
Mm-hmm. But very small.
Very small.
Yes, uh-huh.
And so we're constantly in this junkyard of cosmic debris.
Right, but generally it burns in the atmosphere.
Right. When I was in Vietnam back in the late 60s as a soldier, I remember at night watching the shooting stars. I marveled back then at how many there actually were when there was no other light source.
Oh, yes, I have. I'm out here in the middle of the desert, and we see them like that here. There are many, as you point out. Even at times of non-meteor showers, there are many. But they're small, and as long as they burn up, they're harmless. The ones we're talking about, or the ones you're talking about, are big and very harmful.
Yes. In fact, they're called civilization-threatening.
Mm-hmm.
And I come at this on the basis that the Bible predicts these events are going to take place because God has something He really wants to tell all 6 billion of us on this planet. And this is God's way of getting the attention of every human being everywhere.
All right. Let's come back to Earth for a second. We're probably in the middle of what is going to be, in all times of keeping records, the biggest hurricane season, period.
Yes.
We are in a time of a lot of earthquake movement. Latest, North L.A. yesterday, Central California, really shaken, 5.8. 7 point, I can't recall what it was, down in Mexico.
Yeah.
Recently, the Japanese quake. There's a lot of activity going on.
Did you see the one in New Zealand Monday?
What was that?
It was 6.7, I think.
6.7. All right. Well, that just adds to the list. And is this is the weather change, in your view, and the Earth movement we're experiencing now some sort of message as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The Earth is waxing old, if you will. It bears a very incredible burden. Even the volcanic activity. I was surprised recently to learn that there is a volcano right out of Mexico City,
mm-hmm.
And also Mount Vesuvius, I believe, in Italy,
mm-hmm.
and a number of others that have seismologists extremely worried because of the building pressures seem to indicate that a major, like Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines,
mm-hmm.
a major eruption is forthcoming.
The eruption of Vesuvius would fulfill yet another scallion prophecy. Are you aware of that?
No.
Mm-hmm. The most recent interview I did with Gordon Michael Scallion was a very hurried interview, and he was almost beside himself with worry, and he was saying watch Vesuvius very closely. If Vesuvius and Etna begin to get active,
yes,
then the final phase of his predictions will begin.
Well, we haven't mentioned it yet, but the fourth trumpet of Revelation,
yes,
I believe, is not only one, but the whole ring of fire of the Pacific Rim, I believe, will ignite.
Wonderful. See, I'm laughing because this makes me nervous. Hearing this from you, hearing it from him, the whole Pacific Rim, or the Ring of Fire,
yes,
is going to ignite.
Yes.
Are we feeling the precursors to that now?
I believe so. And the movement of the tectonic plates, as you were just mentioning with the earthquakes,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's in New Zealand whether it's off the coast of Australia or in Mexico or in Iran or China, the movement of these plates, these great land masses, or even the sub-ocean land mass, is ominous.
So, how do you come at this? Do you think that this is written in stone? Earlier you said this might not happen. This is kind of a qualifier. I mean, if the trumpets are blowing, the trumpets are blowing, Larry. As I understand biblical prophecy or revelations, once the tune begins to play, it's playing, isn't it?
Yes, yes. The reason I couched my words is that there is a possibility that I can be wrong. Of course, that always is true with anything I do. My interpretation of Revelation follows a series of interpretive principles, or hermeneutics as they're called, in which I try to show that this is not my attempt to take a mountain of wax and to mold it and to create an image that I want it to be. I try to approach the interpretation of Revelation from a scientific point of view, using, as you would in math or any science, a set of guiding principles or rules of interpretation, so that it's not just Larry Wilson.
Okay, that's good, Larry. How do you connect? What science would you quote to connect your belief with regard to blowing trumpets?
Well, in 1988, when I came to these conclusions, the following year in 1989, I believe it was, I felt a certain amount of vindication, I guess is the only word, when Clark Chapman and David Morrison concluded and made quite a public announcement that asteroids not only had impacted the Earth in the past, but that we are due in the near future, and in science, you know, in scientific terms, near future can be anywhere from, 100 to 300 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when they, you know, when they publicly stated that it is conceivable that Earth is due on the celestial clock a major impact within a 300-year timeline, I figured that, wow, this is wonderful, not in the sense of what we're pretending, but that science and the Bible do find some harmony.
I see. 300 years is a lot longer, from my point of view, as a mere mortal, than sometime before the year 2000.
Yes.
All right, Larry, what I'm going to do is let some of the audience at you, if you want to stay around. All right, stay around then, Larry. Larry Wilson, going in the same direction as Gordon Michael Scallion, starting in a different place, but the destination sounds an awful lot like what Mr. Scallion is predicting. We'll be right back.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Premier Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 20th of September, 1995.
From the great American high desert here in the Southwest. Good morning, I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. My guest is Larry Wilson, And I've tried to approach this from all angles. Larry Wilson is a student of the Bible. Larry Wilson is a student of science. Based on both, he believes two comets are about to plow into Earth. And I'm going to let you ask him questions in a moment.
Now, we take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Well, okay, just this one announcement, then it's on to Larry. As you know, I have authored a book. Arthured a book. I arthured a book. It's called The Art of Talk. And here's the deal. You know, we had a pre-publication offer going for the first 1,000 people. Well, we've got them. We've got the first 1,000 people, and I found that out earlier tonight. I agonized over this for a while, and here's what I'm going to do. I will guarantee only. In other words, last night I didn't say it was over, and I really was supposed to come on the air tonight and say it's over. But I figure if Colin Powell can go out and do 3,000 a day, I can do more than 1,000. So here it is, last day, today. If you would like an autographed copy of my book, here's my offer. If you get it postmarked today, today, I said. Today being the, what, 20, is today is the 21st, isn't it? Is it not the 21st? Is it the 20th? My log says the 20th. No, it's got to be the 21st. All right, so that's it. It's got to be, if it's postmarked the 21st, anything after the 21st with a postmark on it is out of luck. If you get it into the mail by the morning, I will guarantee you that I will get you an autographed copy. I just couldn't come on tonight and say that's the end, or that it ended yesterday. That seemed unfair. So I promised my publisher I would come on the air tonight and say, get it in the mail by the morning, postmarked tomorrow, no, today, excuse me, today. Get it postmarked today, and you'll get an autographed copy. Anybody after that does not. So if you want an autographed copy, it's a hardback edition with special artwork done for it. It's got all kinds of photographs. It's my story, actually. Sad, happy, it's really something. So there it is, last day for autographed copies. Back now to Larry Wilson. Larry, you're back on the air.
Thank you, Art. You know, listening to your book offer sounds very good. It reminds me of a story that happened. I was on a radio talk show, and this man had taken our phone number to call for the, you know, for the book.
Right.
And the lines were busy, and he had given up because, you know, there were so many calls.
I know.
Well, he called, he noticed the phone number about 3 days later, and he remembered the phone number to him was important, like the address, you know.
Sure.
And he calls up, and he says to the office, he said, I wrote this phone number down, but I don't, for the life of me, remember why.
I have people calling me like that all every day. Sometimes I'll wander into the middle of the, you know, into the studio in the middle of the day, and the lights light up, and I'll pick one up, and somebody will say, "Who is this?" And I'll say, "Well, who are you trying to reach?" And they'll say, "Well, I don't know. I wrote this number down."
Right.
You know, they do it in the middle of the night, and then they forget what it is.
That's right.
All right, look, we've had a big audience just join us in Los Angeles and San Francisco. So basically, you believe, from a scientific point of view, as well as a biblical point of view...
That's right.
...that Revelation has begun.
Yes.
That the trumpets have sounded.
They're about to sound.
About to sound, excuse me. And that two planetary comets, would you say?
Yes.
Are going to plow into the Earth, one into the ocean, which will create a minimal 3,000-foot tidal wave.
Yes.
And the other into a landmass, which will, whatever landmass it hits, essentially, what, split it?
bring so much devastation to the continent that it will, that it in many places will be totally vacant of life.
Vacant of life. And you believe this is going to occur prior to the year 2000? In other words, soon?
Yes. Not you know, I can't pinpoint time and location to a resolution that goes beyond what the Bible seems to indicate.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that it's before we reach the seventh millennium, which occurs somewhere between 1998 and shortly thereafter. I don't know exactly where.
Mm-hmm.
But we are about to enter a new age.
Well, what I told the earlier audience, and what I'll repeat now just before we go to the telephones, because I want to let some people at you,
sure.
Is that I've had Scallion, I've had various prophets, people coming at this from all different directions, and people have suggested I get somebody like yourself. So I have, and you're all saying about the same thing, coming from different directions, but saying about the same thing, which is what I find rather unnerving. Let's see what the audience has to say, Larry. East of the Rockies, someplace or another, you're on the air with Larry Wilson. Hello.
Hi, Larry.
Yes.
Hi, this is John. I live in Wisconsin, actually, and I don't think you're a quack or anything, but I just have a question for you.
Okay.
Are you actually worried about this? Because you talked about the book of Luke earlier. And in Luke it says you shouldn't worry about it, actually, because there's nothing you can do about it if it actually is biblical. Okay?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You agree with that?
Yes.
Okay, and then it talks about you must be ready for the Son of God. Over in verse 40, you said you must be ready because the Son of Man will come in an hour when you least expect it.
Yes.
But you're saying you pretty much expect it real soon.
Yes.
So...
He doesn't
that's
sound.
My one question is, like, if God says you're not going to know when it's going to happen, you're pretty much saying we should all be ready because you know when it's going to happen. That's my first question.
All right. Answer it, Larry. You are saying roughly you know when it's going to happen.
Well, I believe that there are a number of signs that indicate the return of Christ.
Lay them out. What are they?
Well, the trumpets, as we've been discussing them.
Well, I know, but I said, well, the trumpets have begun blowing. You said, no, not yet.
No, the trumpets have not yet begun to blow.
Well, then, okay, then what
the
is...
The asteroid impacts and the meteoric firestorm and the volcano eruptions that are predicted has not begun. Those events have not yet taken place. They are yet future, in the near future, oncoming future.
Prior to the comets?
Yes.
The very near future.
Yes.
And what was okay? So this caller's point was almost why worry, be happy.
Well,
in a nutshell.
Yeah, he has a point, and there is a certain amount of
inevitability.
Yes.
All right. Let's keep roaming here. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Larry Wilson.
Yes, this is Keith in Seattle.
Hello, Keith.
Hello. I just wanted to chime in on this whole deal about this seems to me like between the predictions of Scallion and Larry and everybody. I mean, how many times is the horse going to be killed? You know, we have all this pollution, we have nuclear waste, nuclear this, ozone. You know, it's like beating a dead horse. If God is giving us a message, I mean, don't you think it's a little, it's not subtle? It's ridiculous. It's coming from every angle. How many times, you know, you got asteroids coming in, you got floods, you got earthquakes. It just...
It's
absurd.
I feel a little the same way, and I'm even unsettled by the fact that when I come on and I do this kind of program,
yeah.
Inevitably, there's earthquakes to talk about, there's brightening, closening comets to talk about, there was a big earthquake north of L.A., the Mexican earthquake, their hurricane season that will exceed all others on record. I feel like there's a message, all right.
Well, obviously we're doomed, one way or the other. Okay? I thought I'd just chime in with that. Thanks.
So, all right, thank you. we're doomed one more. You know, I go back to what the other caller said. In a way, if this is, I've got my ears out, psychic hairs are up, and they feel something coming. I felt it for a long time, Larry.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't quite put a finger on it. I'm not a religious person, as you seem to be. I believe in a creator.
Yeah.
But I've just got a general sense of great unease, Larry, that the other shoe, kind of like the other shoe's about to come down, something like that.
You're almost, you know, you keep looking at the TV daily to wonder if it has fallen, you know? The other shoe has literally come down.
I know, and some days it feels like it's on the way. A wild card line, you're on the air with Larry Wilson. Hi.
St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi.
The mighty K-Ram.
Yes, sir.
Two questions for your guest.
Sure.
Number one, are you familiar with the term Yahweh?
Yes, I've heard it. Uh-huh.
Okay, you know that is the name of the Creator, right?
I know that's what the Jews called him, yes.
Well, it's just not the Jews. That just happens to be his name. I'm a person that calls upon the name of Yahweh, and I study the scriptures. I'm a student as yourself, and I've basically reached the same conclusions as you and Gordon Michael Skyen. My second question is, in my studies of the book of Revelation, Revelation 13 specifically, there are two beasts mentioned. I'd like to get your opinion. The first beast, in my opinion, is the world government, which I think is the United Nations. And the second beast that gives power and causes all to worship the first beast, I think, is the United States government. And I was curious what your opinion on that was.
Well, I would say our government is somewhat beastly. Do you follow all that, the UN, the One World Order, all that, Larry?
As a result, you see, this is an interesting point here, Art, that Revelation not only predicts these coming catastrophic physical events, it goes to the next level and explains the response of man to these events. And were it not in the Bible, it would be a fairy tale of enormous proportion, because it sounds unreal.
It sounds unreal is right. So bring me back to the science part of it that supports what you believe to be coming. Bring me back to that.
Well, scientists...
I mean, absolutely, don't mention the Bible for a few minutes.
Yeah.
Or the trumpets or Revelation.
Right.
Bring me to the science.
Well, scientists are aware, very painfully aware, I guess is the best way to say it, that we are in a shooting gallery, that the Earth in its annual orbit around the sun is traveling through a cosmic junkyard.
Okay, right, it is. But we've been traveling through this cosmic junkyard until now, since the dinosaurs, without a species-ending event.
That's correct. Now, the discovery, in fact, do you know that the...
So what I'm asking is, where is the science that would suggest that such an event is ahead in the short term?
Well, the basis for the scientific conclusion is that ever in the order of the universe, there are events of certain magnitude on a time scale that is repetitive. For example, every 100 million years, some cataclysmic event occurs, that is, civilization destroying.
That's interesting, because Gigantosaurus, the one they were talking about yesterday, was exactly, they suggest, 100 million years ago, walking around on the planet.
Right. Well, science takes as its basis the chart of events against the time axis, so that in calculating risk over a function of time,
mm-hmm.
This is how you predict how many plane crashes there are going to be in a period of 3 years. This is how you predict how many automobile accidents there's going to be on Thanksgiving Day.
Okay.
So science follows this, looking for a pattern, and Clark Chapman and David Morrison and many, many other scientists have concluded that on the basis of what has been seen,
yes,
that we are at the end or near the end of a pattern due for a major impact. And so they are devising and exploring, and you know, there are conferences around the world examining how can man protect himself.
Well, now I'm going to drag you right back to the biblical part. You make me do that, because you say the scientists are exploring ways to prevent what the Bible would suggest is inevitable.
Yes.
And if it is inevitable, and if something is going to crash into our ocean and then a large landmass,
yes,
destroying virtually most of the life on the planet. By the way, do you predict it to destroy all or most of, or what do you predict?
If I understand the scriptures correctly,
yes,
I understand that about a fourth of the Earth's population will be removed.
Pretty good sized chunk.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So the part that I'm not grasping is, if it is biblically, prophetically inevitable,
mm-hmm,
then what's the point of the scientists trying to figure out how to stop it, divert it, blow it up, do whatever they could do to, you know,
well,
get in the way?
I understand that the scientist does not behold the biblical perspective. He says, I see a coming problem.
That's true.
Therefore, I must do all I can.
All right, yeah, but from your perspective,
yes,
you must think they're absolutely wasting their time. Or do you not?
I suspect that their efforts will, concerning the two trumpets, let me put it that way.
Yes.
That their efforts will be in vain.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Larry Wilson.
Yes, Larry?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Woody from Kansas City, Missouri.
Yes, sir.
What I was wondering about was when you're describing this star that was supposed to hit a continent, had you given any thought to the possibility of what it says in verse 11 of chapter 8 about it being called, the star being called Wormwood?
Yes.
Yeah, Wormwood.
Yes.
Is that what it'll be called?
That's the word Wormwood is taken from a reference in Jeremiah chapter 9,
mm-hmm,
where in ancient times, because of Israel's great apostasy, God gave Israel poisonous waters to drink called Wormwood. And as a result of this impact of the blazing star, the water becomes poisonous or bitter,
mm, yes,
and many people die from drinking it. And the name is Wormwood in the same respect as it was in Jeremiah 9, I think verse 15,
mm-hmm,
if I remember. So the asteroid itself is not called Wormwood as we would label it. Rather, its significance has the same as the poisonous waters as in Jeremiah.
Larry, will we see it coming?
I doubt it.
All right, we'll pick up on that in just a moment. We're at the bottom of the hour. If you have questions for Larry Wilson, we've got another half hour.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from September 20th, 1995.
I call it the quickening. Gordon Michael Scallion calls it intuitiveness. Larry Wilson calls it biblical prophecy. Others just call it science. But all of these seem to be pointing in the same direction. In a moment, more of Larry Wilson.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from September 20th, 1995.
All right, Larry has written a book. He's done a lot of research into what he's talking about this morning. It's called Warning Revelation is About to Be Fulfilled by Larry Wilson. And it's a 140-page book. It's fairly substantial. And he's offering to give it to you. I don't think he knows what he's in for, but he's offering to give it to you. And he's got a number, and I guess all you do is call it, Larry, and ask for a copy of the book.
That's right.
And they can call it right now?
Yes, that's right.
All right. You don't know what you're in for.
Well, we're the book is absolutely free. There's no obligation or any hidden strings. We just make it free as a way of saying thanks for listening.
Here's the facts. Dear Art, personally, I believe the writing of the Bible is a warning. We can't let these doom criers, that's you, make us believe there is no hope. There's always hope. We have been getting warnings for a long time. Let's start doing something about it. Tony in Vancouver, Washington. When one listens to you and people like you speak, Larry, it seems there's an inevitability to what you're saying. But then you sort of qualify it and say, but maybe it won't happen.
Well, Art, you've only heard one-fifth of the story. The whole story is a rather exciting and glorious and all-encompassing story. And it's about a rescue, a dramatic rescue, and the establishment of a world that will be perfect. Bad news and good news, in that order, if you will.
That's the problem, in that order, and the close-in prediction that you're making about, a big piece of rock slamming into Earth, the ocean, then the landmass, and a quarter of the Earth's people dying.
Yes.
That's the bad news. That's pretty bad news, Larry. I mean, in terms of a scale of 1 to 10, that's very bad.
It is, and it's very sobering. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to trifle with it, but by the same token, if that's all there was to the story, you would have a sense of helplessness and hopelessness. But that's not all there is to the story. It is the dramatic part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
But here's something that I think that might help your listeners, and perhaps even as you are so instrumental in talking to so many people of varieties of backgrounds and differences in directions, but sort of heading in the same direction. This story, at least from the biblical perspective, is that God is not going to rescue the religious. He's going to rescue those who will live by faith and put their confidence in Him. Now, the rescue may be from death, or it may be after you have experienced death in these cataclysmic events that are coming. But the Bible doesn't teach, as I see it, that God saves religious people. Rather, He saves people who will put faith in Him as their Creator and Redeemer. Now, that's an entirely different feel than God saving the religious zealots. If you know what I'm saying.
I do. and I don't know what I'm feeling. What I'm going to do is go back to the phone. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Larry Wilson. Hi.
Mr. Wilson hasn't stated that also in Revelation it states that the angel will throw the millstone into the sea, destroying Babylon. In 1996, we're going to send a rocket up to monitor a near-miss asteroid that's coming by, supposedly in 1998. The problem is it may hit, and I think Babylon is a euphemism for Sodom and Gomorrah.
Which is us.
Which is Hollywood and the West Coast.
Las Vegas, especially Las Vegas.
They will not be able to destroy it because I believe we'll be in World War III after Bob Dole becomes president, unfortunately.
Well, gee, you're just a bowl of cheer.
That's right.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. If there was anybody who could outdo you, Larry, maybe he just did.
I think so.
Oh, my God. All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Larry Wilson. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Dave from Fresno, California.
Hi, Dave.
I just wanted to ask Larry, which cataclysmic event is going to do us in first?
Good question.
Here is an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
In Revelation 8, verse 5, there's a scene in which John writes that he saw an angel in heaven ministering at the altar of incense.
Mm-hmm.
And this angel cast down his censer. Now, bear in mind, this is before the trumpets began.
Okay.
That when this angel cast down his censer, there are four phenomenon that will be observed around the world all at the same time by all the people of the world.
All right, so which one is first is his question.
All right, there will be rumblings, thunders, flashes of lightning, and a global earthquake. The whole earth will tremble. Then the first trumpet will sound, with it, which is the meteoric showers of burning hail. And secondly will be the asteroid impact on the sea, the asteroid or comet impact upon the land, and then the volcano ring of fire eruption. That's the order of events as I anticipate them to begin.
Sounds great.
Now, Art?
Yes?
I was going to point out that until 2 years ago, seismologists had argued that it was not possible to have a global earthquake.
Until 2 years ago?
Yes.
And who now argues it is possible?
A number of seismologists, after the, to their credit, they have reconsidered that the tectonic plates are not sitting on a solid mass, but rather a molten, crumbly type of mass in the heart of the earth. Do you remember the earthquake?
You know, again, you're beginning to sound like Scallion. Scallion's view is that there is a molten core.
Yes.
And that it is in the process now of shifting.
Yes.
And is that similar to
what... Yes. Well, this is what
drives me nuts.
The seismologists have concluded as a result, and they have evidence of it now, the first earthquake in recorded history that has moved the entire hemisphere happened last year. It happened down in Colombia, South America. It was about 450 miles deep, and it was felt all the way into Canada.
You know what? I recall.
Remember that?
I do, yes.
Scientists
were saying
yes.
That it was one of the deepest earthquakes they had ever detected.
That's correct.
Uh-huh.
And not ever dreaming, because there's no way to explore depths that, you know, that deep in the earth. No practical ways yet known, anyway. That now they're convinced, as a result of this, that they have evidence sufficient to demonstrate a global earthquake. Incidentally, this is part of the package, if you will, that ignites the whole story of Revelation. And it begins with the global earthquake and the phenomenon that I was just describing to your caller.
All right, let's keep moving. Time is short. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Larry Wilson.
Good morning, Howard and Larry.
Good morning.
Hey, I was just wondering how this would fit in with Larry's philosophy here. I have a thing here that talks about the seven tribulations that would occur during the final 7 weeks of time. And it begins with the Battle of Jerusalem and ends with the Battle of Armageddon. And in between, in some order, not necessarily this one, there would be the tribulations of blistering heat, destruction of ships, the water made bitter, the sun and moon smitten.
All the things he's talked of.
Yes, and men seeking untimely death. Now, in this particular thing, it says that this would occur during the final 7 weeks of time. And from what I understand, generally, according to Scripture, a week would be 7 years. And so, you know, I was just kind of thinking that if the Battle of Jerusalem had to do with, you know, somewhere along the lines of the birth of the nation of Israel.
All right. Where are you calling from, sir?
I'm calling from Minnesota.
Minnesota. All right. Any comments, Larry?
Yes. Many Christians, anticipate what is called the Great Tribulation for a period of 7 years. And these events that we're describing here are woven into that tribulation. My view is contrasted just a little bit. The good news is I don't believe that the tribulation is 7 years, but rather 1,335 days, about 3 years and 8 months. And the tribulation commences, that is spoken of in the Scripture, with these cataclysmic events.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Larry Wilson. Hi.
Hi. I'm a Christian, been a Christian about 8 years, and I've studied prophecy. That's kind of a main focus, obviously, because of the quickening, as you say, Art. I think that anybody who sets dates is doing a lot of harm to the Christian movement. And, I agree and I feel that we are in the last times, but I don't think he can be so matter-of-fact about it and say that, say, from the time Clinton became president, we're going to have two comets hit the ground. There's nowhere in the Bible that says within a certain date of time that those two comets are going to hit the earth. And if I can hang on the line and hear what he has to say, I'd like to comment back if I could.
Yeah, go ahead. Larry, how do you answer that? I mean, he wants to know how you have concluded all of this based on what you've studied in the Bible. There is no real time. How do you know it has begun or is about to begin? I'm sorry.
Well, in Bible prophecy, there are, as I find them, about 12 to 15 specific time periods. For example, in Revelation 13:5, there's a time period of 42 months. In Daniel, there's a time period of 70 weeks. In Revelation 20, there's a time period of 1,000 years. But my point is that when you add all of the prophetic time periods together, they produce and reveal a large pattern, the same kind of pattern that scientists use. Not the same pattern, but the same type of pattern.
Caller, that is what's unnerved me. You know the way I feel about this quickening thing.
Yes.
Which I don't necessarily relate to the Bible or anything else.
Right.
But then I listen to Scallion, you study Edgar Cayce, or you listen to Larry Wilson. They all seem to be saying about the same thing, and that unnerves the hell out of me.
I agree, and I think what's eerie about it is that with Scallion and all these other people, there is no, consequence to the decision and the faith you put in it. If everybody's right, the only person that has a consequence to it is this man's belief and Christian's belief, because in that sense there's a heaven and a hell. If Scallion's right and we die and we just turn into some goo, who cares? But if the Bible
wait a minute. Scallion never said we die and turn into goo.
Well, no, I know he didn't say that.
That's unfair.
But what I'm saying is that the Christians believe that there is a heaven and a hell,
yes,
and an eternity. Other beliefs say, well, if you're a good person, this and that. Christianity believes that if you've given your life to Christ and trusted in Him for your salvation, you'll survive.
All right, see, this is where, thank you, caller. Larry, this is where I run into all kinds of trouble personally
right.
with religion.
Right.
I don't think, in other words, there are good people and there are bad people. We talk about them on the air here all the time.
Right.
And it is not my belief that if somebody didn't sprinkle water on your head,
right.
or you've not been born again, or whatever it is that people say you've got to do to be one of the lucky few that'll get sucked up just before whatever happens.
Right.
I think there are good people who will, if there is going to be the great suck-up, will be on their way,
sure.
Even though they didn't go to church every Sunday. And
that's
I,
right.
And so I really did want to bring you on the air this morning to get to put this perspective on, just kind of balance some of the other things I'm doing, and I'm finding that it's not balancing it, it's reinforcing it again.
You know
and,
something, Art, I think you were more profound in what you said than perhaps you might realize, and that is God, who does the saving of humanity ultimately in the end, is far more generous in what He considers good and bad than religious people are.
Well, I sometimes wondered what if the great moment comes and the only people left down here are the Christians? but there would be a lot of, well, anyway. First time caller line, you're on the air with Larry Wilson. Hello.
Hi, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Where are you, sir?
I'm in Rancho Santa Fe, California.
All right, go ahead.
I can't believe I got through. I've got a bunch of things I need to say real quick.
Do it real quick.
Okay, first of all, the Bible's very clear on a couple things, that no man knows the time or the hour when Jesus Christ is going to return.
Right.
The Jehovah's Witnesses have been doing this for the last century, and every time they predict it, they trip themselves up and have to reset the date.
Yeah.
Second of all, concerning all of these things, when I listen to your show, I hear all of this end times predictions, but not very many people say, what is to be our response when we hear all of this? And I think what God is trying to get us as a people to do is to get down to our knees, get down to business with Him, and prepare our own hearts and our houses for what's coming in the future. And the Bible also, you said you were having trouble with, excuse me, I'm nervous, I can't believe I got through. The Bible's very clear that all have sinned and fallen short of the grace of God.
Mm-hmm. All right. This is beginning to, thank you very much for the call, sir, but we're really getting a little too close to actual preaching here, and I don't want to do that. And I've got to take off, Larry, but again, you've got a book. It's called Warning Revelation is About to Be Fulfilled, and you're willing to give it to people.
That's right, yes.
They can call right now.
That's right.
There's no charge. There's no strings.
That's right.
Nobody's going to come knocking.
We're not. I want to make a point that we're not affiliated or endorsed by any church.
I've got you.
In fact, I don't belong to a church. We're not recommending a church. We are simply lifting up the Bible as a consideration for the understanding of the times in which we live.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I appreciate your being on with us, Larry. We're out of time. Good luck to your operators. They're going to be busy.
Well, it's been a privilege to be with you, Art, and best wishes to you.
Larry Wilson, take care. All right, everybody. It's off to the... You know, that really was a troubling couple of hours. We'll be right back.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. we take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Can you tell I found some new bumper music I like? Anybody remember what this is? Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Come on now, you know what that is. Anyway, I thought it'd make a great piece of bumper music, and it does. All right, I've got a lot to talk to you about. God, what a strange night. Larry Wilson was very disconcerting for me, and I'm still trying to put my finger on it. It has something to do with religion. You know, I know it does. And let me try, and then I've got some more information for you here. I struggle with religion, as many of you know, and I don't allow a lot of it on the radio, but I also don't disallow it. And I really thought that with all of the people that I've had on who are off on the edge, you know, and I know that a lot of you think that Scallion and Hoagland and, I you know, the list really goes on for a mile, are out on the edge, and that I never came at it from a biblical point of view. And I thought Larry would be an opportunity to do that, and he was. And what's bothering me about the whole thing, I mean, there's a whole litany of things that bother me. One of them is that religion seems to say this is inevitable. I don't know if I believe that. I think that science is a very powerful thing, and I believe that if something was coming at us, assuming that we got to know about it beforehand, and I think comets are a lot like bullets. I'm told that when you're hit with one, thankfully I never have been, you get hit with a bullet and then you hear the sound, if you follow me. You never see it coming, you never hear it coming. You just, you have a hole in you and then you hear the crack of the rifle. And that's very much, I suppose, the way a comet could hit. So Larry could be right. I don't know, the whole thing just disconcerted me in a very strange way. But I'm glad I did it. Does that resonate with you at all? I have here something that apparently is a great honor, and so let me read this, and we'll get into other things here. But this just came over my fax machine. It says, "Dear Art, you have been awarded the best radio talk show in the Phoenix New Times newspaper. The Best of Phoenix issue is very respected. This means more to Valley residents than our..." Well, I don't want to say that. Anyway, Art, what I'm trying to say is this is a great honor. Congratulations, my friend. You're the best in Phoenix, Arizona, and the world. Your friend, Rick. Last year, the award went to Bob Mohan, KFII, and he sent the article, and here it is. It says, "Best Radio Talk Show, Dreamland with Art Bell, Sundays 7 to 10, KFII. Crystalline structures on the moon, film footage of the dissection of a Martian, well, no, not exactly, Bigfoot, actually an alien. In these days of talk radio, taking the blame for various anti-government acts of terrorism, Dreamland concerns itself with more celestial topics. Each Sunday evening offers listeners the opportunity to comment on the theories of experts, topics of alien abduction, the Roswell incident, predictions for AD 4000, as well as interviews with legendary abductees, including Arizona's very own Travis Walton. At the eye of this ideological hurricane is the calm, unskeptical master of ceremonies, host Art Bell, broadcasting from what he refers to as the Kingdom of Nye County, Nevada, being the renegade county it is, whose commissioners transferred ownership of federal land to the county. Bell prides himself as being the broadcaster closest to Area 51, it's true, the renowned alien crash site at Nellis Air Force Base, not necessarily true. Has he had a sighting? Of course. Listening to Bell's measured, even tones, you know that to him, any theory is as plausible as the next. Add to the mix advertisements for shortwave radios and companies that will help turn your cash savings to gold, and you have a radio show reaching out to the anti-government Second Amendment survivalist militia crowd as well. But Dreamland is not to be typecast. As Bell intones at the end of each show, Dreamland is a program dedicated to areas of human experience not easily put into a box. Things seen at the edge of vision, yet as real as the air we breathe, but can't see. That's the article. And so they have awarded me the best radio talk show host, best radio show, I guess. Thank you. That is quite an honor, and the best of Phoenix 1995, it says. Thank you. Whether it is Dreamland or this program that sometimes models itself after that, in some senses, it is the very diversity that I seek that I think accounts for the success, or I hope does. So that's a great honor, and thank you, Phoenix. Thank you. This fact's in. Entertainment Tonight claims they are going to show additional footage of the Santilli film tomorrow, 9:22. The brief snippet of film they showed was of the panels with the six-finger impressions. I'll be damned. I wonder if Fox is trying to sell off the footage they have that doesn't fit into their Roswell theory. Or is this an attempt to release credible information through less than credible sources, or vice versa? In any event, I thought people ought to know so they can roll a tape. She signs it Susie Luce in Santa Barbara. Normally, I'm sure that's a not a real last name. Susie Luce. Is that like Susie Wong? So there you go. Entertainment Tonight with additional footage showing the panels. Wow. Don't miss it, folks. I can't tell you how disconcerted I was by Larry, and I don't know why. Then this. Just in, seismologists say, you're going to love this, that an earthquake that shook a wide area of Southern California Wednesday was stronger than previously thought. They say the quake's magnitude was at least 5.8, upgraded from 5.5. The quake struck at 4:27 p.m. Pacific time Wednesday. There are reports of minor damage, no injuries. It's the second powerful quake in a month, centered about 10 miles north of Ridgecrest. A Caltech seismologist says a magnitude 5.4 quake centered in the same area on August 17th was actually a foreshock to Wednesday's quake. The quake was felt throughout Los Angeles and its suburbs, in San Bernardino, Orange, and as far east as Las Vegas. Do you get the feeling that I do, and I don't like it one little bit, that something, the other shoe, as I keep saying, is about to fall? And I cannot tell you how disconcerted I am this morning about all of this. It'll pass, I hope.
Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
All right, there is, as always, a great deal of news to talk about. But I think that what I'm going to do for now is, rather than, well, maybe I will. There's just so much going on. AT&T is breaking up into three different phone companies. Now, they're not divestiture. Already occurred. They're doing this voluntarily. We will have, as we know it, AT&T. No change in your phone service. That'll be one company. The second one will sell equipment. The third one will sell business computers out of the home market into business. They will end up laying off probably about 8,000 people will get a pink slip as a result of this. The market liked it. The shareholders love it. And me, I miss the old phone company. You know what? I really miss the old phone company. I miss phones like the phone I've got right here. I've got one right here. You know what it is? I look on the back of it. You know what it says? Bell System property, not for sale. That telephone. I miss these telephones. And I suppose really I ought not have this phone, huh? Bell System property, not for sale. Probably the phone police are going to come get it tomorrow now. But I mean, this is an example of the solidity of the phone company the way it once was, and I miss it. I miss the phone company. And now it's going to split up even more. OJ, it is possible we have seen the last witness in the OJ Simpson trial. Being a, that's all, folks. Well, not quite. Yesterday, a motion to suppress evidence based on the impeachment of Furman and Van Atter denied. A motion to limit the length of closing arguments next week. Denied. Closing arguments begin Tuesday. That is going to be very interesting. That will be 1 year to the date after the beginning of the trial. Closing arguments will begin on the anniversary of the beginning of the trial. Frederick Whitehurst, the FBI guy who was going to testify if they could get him in, will not. Is information not considered relevant to this case? So that's about it. No limit on final arguments. The jury is beginning to get a little testy, I would say. And can you blame them? So that's it, folks. Other than the closing arguments, it's over. What kind of jury verdict do you expect? Colin Powell, in Boston, on his book signing, which, by the way, has gone right up to the top of the list. It is now the number one bestseller, Colin Powell. He clearly is now leaning more toward being, I believe he's going to run as a Republican. He said yesterday, quote, "The GOP is a big tent that can indeed handle moderate positions on gun control, abortion, and so on." The latest poll, commissioned I think by NBC, shows that if Powell were to run against Clinton, Powell would have 48%, Clinton 33%. In other words, Powell would beat Clinton. Bob Dole versus Powell for the nomination is a statistical tie. Now, I would like you to think a little bit about this. Powell would beat the hell out of Clinton, 48% to 33%, but now digest the following. 71% of the people say they know very little about Powell. Now, what does that say? What does that say? 71% of the people say they hardly know a thing about Powell. And yet, by 48 to 33%, they're willing to replace Clinton with Powell. Now, what does that say about Clinton? What does that say about Powell? And what does that say about the electorate? I'm not sure any of it's good. Frankly, I'm not sure any of it's good. So, there you are. Powell made a statement the other day about, says politicians are demonizing immigrants. He is the son, as you know, of a Jamaican immigrant. said Monday that he supports banning welfare and other government benefits for those who enter the country illegally, except when it comes to children. Interesting. Bosnia. The UN, I mean, I've just got to get the, it's too important not to get this stuff in. The UN has announced it is suspending the bombing of the Serbs indefinitely because they have, according to the UN, complied. They have moved 250 heavy weapons outside the exclusionary zone, lifting the siege of Sarajevo. The map of what used to be Yugoslavia has changed again. The Serbs have got about half the land. The Croat Muslims, Croats and Muslims, have about half. There are now 90,000 Serb refugees on the move. There is no peace agreement. So, what have we done? Can anybody out there tell me what we have done? We have assisted the Bosnian Muslims and the Croats to take back about 30% of the land they lost, making it roughly half and half. All right, we've done that. They have not stopped the war. They still want to kill each other. We're going to try to force them into a peace agreement, and if we are unfortunate enough, in my opinion, to achieve that, we will then send 18 to 25,000 Americans to enforce the peace and remain there, I think, for a very long time. And as soon as they leave, of course, the war will begin again because we have not changed the hearts. All we've done is bomb them into submission. I did predict that we'd be able to do that. We have done that. So I guess I would just say, what next? We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from September 20th, 1995. Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 20th of September, 1995.
Maybe this does explain it. Here's the facts that just came out. I just have this terrible uneasy feeling tonight. Maybe I can help you understand why you are uneasy. I am too. I think it's because that you believe that prophecy and science and just good old common sense observation seems to be conveying some very frightening predictions and events. Then you have to begin the process of sorting out what religion has to do with such prophecy. In other words, if the Christian prophets are right, what about all the other stuff they teach? That's from Mike. And here, let me set you a little more on edge. Listen to this from Gary. Art, just returned from Mammoth Mountain in the Sierra Nevada Mountains, where I was doing some fly fishing. Now, near the base of the mountain, there are many spots where the Forest Service has closed campgrounds and hiking trails due to large amounts of carbon dioxide gas leaking out of the ground. The quantity of gas is so large that trees are dying and hikers can become asphyxiated. Is this ancient volcano ready to blow? The rangers were very tight-lipped when I questioned them. Can any listeners out there help? Great show, Gary. Thanks, Gary. Just what I needed to read. There's a big debate going on about prayer in school, and the chief of police in Los Angeles is suing. This is a very interesting story. The chief of police in Los Angeles, Willie Williams, is suing the city of Los Angeles, suing his employers, for $10 million. He claims the city defamed his character by leaking a story about receiving a free room in Las Vegas. In other words, I guess he believes that somebody in the city council or somebody in city government leaked this and then leaked the story, and then it was printed in L.A. and it defamed his character. When it turns out, I am told, that his wife's level of gambling entitled him to the free room. There are, you know, the high rollers in Las Vegas get free rooms. They do that all the time. They comp. It's called comp. And so the city council apparently, the way I understand it, retracted it somehow or another. But now he will sue the city. And the question is, can you sue the city you're working for and serve that city at the same time? I wonder if that's what he intends to do. So to the telephones, and let's see what we've got out there. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
If I disappear on you in the middle of talking, we've got a snowstorm here, and the...
Snowstorm. Where are you?
I'm in Denver, and we were supposed to have a slight dusting, and we have heavy, wet snow, and it's taking out my trees by the thousands.
you're kidding.
No, it's lots of the city is without power tonight.
You're kidding.
No, it's our first snow this year.
You're listening to KHOW, I think, in Denver. Wow, I hadn't heard about that, a snowstorm in Denver.
Yeah, matter of fact, it held up Clinton and Gore's planes, Air Force One and Air Force Two, because they landed out at the National Guard and none of the icing machines worked, or de-icing machines, rather. So they had to send in for stuff from DIA.
Wow. Well, all right, so I'll understand. Anyway, welcome to the program.
Thank you. What I wanted to comment on is with everybody feeling really uneasy, I was thinking perhaps it's our inner self. You know, all along we've been kind of listening to things and saying, yeah, I really need to prepare. Yeah, we really need to set this aside and take care of this and that. And then when other people talk about it and show us things there, then you kind of look back and go, whoa.
I know.
I haven't done this yet, you know?
I know. It really gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, and that's because there's so many things happening right now. When Mercury goes retrograde on Friday, it's going to be worse.
Well, we'll survive, and you'll probably survive the snowstorm, too.
Oh, yeah, if my roof stays in one piece. I had a couple of branches that came down and hit the roof so hard it shook the whole house.
Really? I know that kind of wet snow is very dangerous, and... brings down phone lines and power lines.
Cables out.
Very handily indeed. Oh, your cable's out?
Yeah.
Well, do you have emergency radios and lights and stuff like that?
Not the lights, but the radios we do have. Lights,
well, I'll tell you what I recommend. I've got it here, and I really, really recommend it. Bob Crane sells it. This is not even an ad. You put a solar panel up on your roof. They're not expensive. And it charges every day. You know, an emergency battery, power pack that they designed, and it drives lights, and doesn't cost you a penny. After you make the investment, you know, the sun comes up and charges it, and you
have a neat idea.
It really is a very, very good idea. You asked Bob Crane about that. All right, thank you.
Have a good night.
Take care. And then I'll say this one more time, I guess. In fact, I better say it a few times. Here's a fax. Dear Art, just to warn you, there's more than 1,000 last-minute book orders with requests for your autograph on the way. Since you gave in, or out, to the pleadings at about 12:15 a.m. Pacific on your Wednesday night, Thursday morning show, many of us finally got off the dime and went for it. There is something about competing with 8 million people that makes a person think no matter how fast one moves, one is always going to be too late. How does that strike one? Anyway, thanks for the relenting in your adamant stance about signing more than 1,000. 1,000 is a pretty small percentage of your audience, and there are so many more that want your second book. Anyway, that was from Bill in Bremerton. What I'm saying is, yeah, I am relenting in a way, because I got a call from the publisher today, and they said, well, we're already over 1,000. And so that put me in a real pickle, because that would mean that I would have had to have come on the air tonight and say it's all over already. And I wanted to at least give everybody like a one-day warning. I thought that was only fair. I mean, I sat and I pondered the whole thing earlier tonight. And here's what I'm doing. If your letter is postmarked no later than today, now this really is ironclad. This really is ironclad. If it's postmarked no later than today, the 21st, let's be very clear about this. Whatever number come in, I'll sign them. And then that's it. That's absolutely it. So in other words, I guarantee you that if you get it postmarked today, no later than today, you'll get a signed, autographed a copy of my book. Okay? That's the deal. That way you know you cannot lose out. And I couldn't face coming on here tonight and telling you it was all over, because people who mailed them yesterday would be saying, man, I got, that wouldn't be a proper word to use. I got cheated. And so I don't want that to happen. So I'm giving you honest, fair warning here. This is it. It's got to be postmarked today. And if it is, then you're guaranteed you'll get an autograph version. I don't know how many that means I'm going to have to sign. Too many, I'm sure. But I'll do it. I mean, if Colin Powell can do it, I can do it. So west of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Oh, good. Rick Meister Gerhardt here in Oakland, California.
Yes, sir.
Well, I think that going back to what somebody earlier was talking about, I do believe in prophecy. However, I do not necessarily believe that this means that the religion of this or that particular prophet is necessarily true.
Well, okay. You know, I'm with you there, and I reserve, no matter what people may conclude about me on the air, sir, I reserve judgment, and I'm very agnostic when it comes to not just religion itself, but to prophecy, even that of Gordon Michael Scallion, who I very much respect, you know, but it seems to me like they're all sort of saying about the same thing.
Yeah, if there really was a God, I seem to think that it, well, there is. It's the earth underneath our feet.
Let me try a little reverse thing with you. Maybe this will help answer it. And anybody else who wants to try this is welcome to, too. If you were God, and you look down on what was going on all around us today, what would you do?
I would say there's too many people. I would say that what's going on is kind of like what these scientists in years gone by have seen when there was too many rats in the cage. You know, it's just all this goofy stuff starts happening. You know, I would say that if there really is a God, it would be more along the lines of what the Native Americans in the Southwest felt. It most certainly would not be the God of a band of desert wandering, flea-bitten, camel jockey mass murderers that we now call the ancient Hebrews, which through a series of bizarre historical accidents.
Aren't you being a little rough on them?
Hello?
I said, aren't you being a little rough on them?
Well, you know, everybody is you know, comes from bad backgrounds in one way or another. But, you know, in through a series of historical accidents, the God of that small little band, through Christianity and through Islam, has come to dominate, or at least predominate, in about half of the world. And it's just through a series of history, and if it wasn't that one, it would be another one.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't that one, it'd be this one over here or that one over there. You see what I'm saying? It's total random.
Okay? So you would, as God, you would do something to eliminate a bunch of folks?
Probably.
All right, sir. I'm going to hold it there. Try the approach yourself. Ask yourself. I know it. A person never really should put themselves in a position of God. But suppose you were, in other words, all powerful, the Creator, and you looked down now on your created, your creation. What would you do? Ask yourself, really, really ask yourself that question. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. This is Mariana from Portland.
How you doing?
I'm fine. Listen, I liked your guest, even though it was kind of difficult to listen to.
Yes, it was.
I hear your angst in the sense of this whole thing of religion and having to be saved. You know, I mean, there's decent people out there, you know, and I talk
can't,
about all
yeah,
the time.
I can't believe it. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't believe it. I don't believe that the born-agains and the, the particularly religious devotees are going to be
right.
All sucked up, while the rest of us who haven't taken that step are going to be left behind, be hit by meteor and
well,
fire.
Well, I've been baptized, you know, but I mean, I hate to put it on someone, you know, out there in Outer Mongolia who hasn't, you know. And by the way, I did get through to his line on his book. He's going to be really busy on that. And no, you haven't brought this up yet. I mean, I could talk about Bosnia, but one thing that's really been on my mind is there was a custody case in Texas
mm-hmm.
where a judge told a woman, she's Mexican by birth, she lives in the United States, if she was trying to make her daughter bilingual, who is five. And so she
I'm very familiar with
Spanish,
the case, yes.
And the guy told her that this was child abuse.
Yeah.
You know,
Judge warned her that if she did not start speaking English, he would call it child abuse and remove the child from
right.
the home.
Well, yes, she knew some English, but she was trying Spanish first because...
No. Her English was quite good. I heard her.
Right. And, no, she was teaching both, but she figured that, you know, with Spanish first, she could get immersed in English later. And I just, for all the English first people out there, if what you're hoping for is that, you know, you just won't be able to hear Spanish out there, this is really scary, you know, because...
Well, that judge needs to take a real long walk off a very short pier.
Exactly. But, I mean, that a judge could do this is really, really, really scary to me.
Well, I agree with you. Thank you very much for the call. That was so stupid. That smacks of fascism. That is not what we are about. If you want to get ahead in America, it behooves you to learn English. You don't learn English? It's like when I went to Japan. When I was on Okinawa, Japan, in the Far East, I was actually quite fluent in Japanese. It's gone away because I haven't used it. But I couldn't have lived. I mean, I couldn't have lived. It's really serious. You've got to learn how to do the basics. You know, where's the bathroom? You've got to start right there. And you've got to learn how to order food. You've got to learn how to, and if you don't, you don't make it. So it's an obvious thing here in America. And what business a judge would have intruding into somebody's home, mandating what language would be spoken, is just absolutely so outrageous that it's hard to even consider seriously. And it would be laughable if it weren't so detestable. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey there, Art. How you doing?
Okay.
I was just wondering, you know, thinking about the sound of the world thing. Let me, there we go. I was just thinking that perhaps we should get away from the end of the world thing.
Okay, go ahead, sir.
Seems like we, we put ourselves into, worrying so much about those little things, you know?
And well, then go ahead, sir.
And say something else, huh? Well, that's what I meant, is that, it's the,
Yes?
The quickening, you know?
Well, now here you go.
Yeah, you know, it's like,
You're talking about the end of the world.
I know. That's why I called this dude.
Talk about the end of the world.
Let's
talk about something else other than the end of the world.
Well, I mean, get away from thinking about the end of the world.
Go ahead, sir. Do you see what you're doing?
Yeah.
Good.
All right.
Have a good night, sir. Yeah, well, someday I suppose it will end. I'll snap myself out of this, I suppose. You know, it's just that so much of it weaves together. That's what's bothering me. I mean, Mike, who sent me the fax, has got it right. Too much of this is weaving together. You know, we're going to do, since we're on the subject, and anyway, we're going to do a special issue of our newsletter on the quickening. That's in the planning stages right now. Who knows, I've got enough material for it, don't I?
Now, we take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Well, I really just really needed this. This comes from Diane listening to KMBC in Los Angeles. And it's a follow-up. Yesterday, Diane sent us a story about two men who broke into a mortuary. This is really awful. In Los Angeles, and stole a bunch of computers and this and that. But while they were in the mortuary, they had sex with two of the dead female bodies in the mortuary. And there is nothing to charge them with other than the break-in, I suppose, and stealing whatever they stole, because there is no law. See if you believe this. There is no law that says sex with the dead is illegal. Now, Diane is sending me a fax saying that on a half-hour news, this last half hour, KMPC reported that one of these individuals is the great nephew of a very important person here in America. And before I put this on the air, I want some verification of it elsewhere. I hope that you understand, Diane. If somebody in LA, please don't fax me, call me. What I'll do is open a line for LA and see if I can get independent verification of this. And if I can, we'll get it on the air right after the top of the hour news. This is the gosh darndest story I have ever seen, and here it is again, apparently still in the news in Los Angeles. So, Diane, thank you for keeping me up to date, and you've been largely on target. I've got a name here of one of these people, and you're not going to believe who he is related to. My God, what a story. Anybody with information on this, before I get it on the air, call me now from Los Angeles, please, at 1-800-618-8255. I want confirmation of this, please, during the top of the hour news, the next 5 minutes. So I'm going to go searching for LA only at 1-800-618-8255, LA only on that number for about 5 minutes here. We'll be right back in most markets.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from September 20th, 1995.
Well, maybe it'll be fun just to stick around and see how low we can go. What do you think? I will snap myself out of this. It cannot be fun to listen to a talk show host who is depressed. And I actually admit this morning I am really kind of depressed about the state of mankind. And, you know, somewhere here I've got the Unabomber's quote. You know, he wasn't altogether wrong, necessarily. He wasn't altogether wrong. Says the great guru of modern technology. I'm dead set in the middle of it. You know what, though? I don't think modern technology is the cause. I think maybe he is really wrong about that. Modern technology is not the cause, I think, of the social degeneration that we are clearly seeing. What is, I'm not altogether sure, but I don't think it is computers or microchips or advances in technology. I don't think that's causing people to throw babies through windows and drown them and have sex with the dead and do all these kinds of depraved, horrendous, totally indigestible social acts. I don't think it is technology. I really don't. And I don't think it's TV either. But it is something. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, I'm calling from Eugene, the land of political correctness.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
Yeah, terrible there. Listen, if Colin Powell can run as a Republican, then why not Walter Mondale or Mike Dukakis? I mean, if you're not dead set against raising taxes, as far as I'm concerned, you're for them. And if you're not dead set against illegal immigration, you're for it. And those are the two big issues in this coming election.
And if you're not dead set against stopping gun control, then you're,
I agree.
Then you're for it.
I agree.
Look, I don't see a great deal of difference ideologically between Colin Powell and the governor of California, Pete Wilson, and I don't think either one of them is electable in a convention that is going to be made up of pretty much ideologically pure Republicans. No way, Jose.
Thank you. I wanted to hear that, Art. I was depressed, but that statement made me feel better.
Does that cheer you up, really?
It does. It does. Thanks.
Well, whatever does it for you, sir. Thank you very much for the call. If you've been around for a while in politics, you know what conventions are like. And it is either going to be, I think it's going to be Bob Dole. But now, you want to be depressed again. Survey says that Colin Powell could beat Bill Clinton by a much bigger margin than could Bob Dole, who is, by the way, in a statistical tie with Colin Powell for the nomination. Colin Powell would beat Bill Clinton right now, 48-33%. Imagine that. And if you really want something to worry about, check this out. Over 70% of the American people say they don't really know very much about Colin Powell, but they're ready to make him president. Doomed. I tell you. I'll be in a better mood tomorrow. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, this is Eagle River, Rush.
Eagle River, Alaska.
The River of Eagles.
Now, I've not heard that in a long time.
Hey, listen, Warren Christopher's nephew has a pretty strange idea of what safe sex is, huh?
Please.
Hey, yeah, listen.
Do you, you know, did you hear what I just said before you called?
Well, refresh my mind.
Refresh your mind. You know, God, we're gonna be OJing it from now until forever.
Hey, listen, speaking of that, that's why I called that.
Oh, okay, good.
And I want to tie it in. OJ. You've been talking a lot about Colin Powell.
That's a brighter subject, a double murder. Sure, let's talk about that.
Yeah, well, I saw Colin Powell being interviewed, and he said it was a shame that there's still people like Detective Mark Furman in America. And I have an answer for Colin.
What is that answer?
Actually, it's twofold. But the first thing that came to my mind, yeah, it may be we don't know what the truth is about Detective Furman. He may be being framed by the scheme team. But then on the other hand, Colin, how about the other Colin from Jamaica that took it upon himself to weed out the white people on the Long Island commuter train? It's funny that Colin didn't mention that. And he, Colin Ferguson, has been convicted, and Colin Powell doesn't realize that that's what the real shame is. The real shame is Colin Ferguson.
They're both shames. They're both shames on us. Colin Ferguson is a shame on us. I see where you're coming from and where how you're coming at him. That's clear. But Colin Powell's not wrong. He's not wrong. It is a shame. It's another sign of the quickening. Race relations appear to be, other than in lawful ways or legislative ways, race relations in the hearts of people seem to be hardening and worsening. So Colin Powell's not wrong about that. And what difference does it make whether you talk about some crazy black man who takes a gun and shoots up white people or the other way around? Anybody who's killing or maiming or burning because of racial or ethnic differences, this is all about in the same boat as far as I'm concerned. So I don't fully disagree with what Colin Powell said. And, you know, I mean, really it is true. In a lot of ways, race relations in America are on the... We're not doing very well here, are we? But it's just one more sign. It's one more thing onto the pile. I think Rush once made a list, didn't he, of 50... absolute truths. I can't remember what it was he made a list of. Somebody ought to make a list of the quickening signs, and there are at least 50. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Yes. I enjoyed listening to your guest. I thought he was very interesting and very sincere.
Well, he was very sincere. There's no question about it.
Okay. Now, about all the horrible stories that you've been mentioning on the show, you know, the Book of Revelation is very deep, but it's very prophetic. And people fail to mention about the ten kings who come to power, seven and then ten, and they'll give their strength to the beast, and they'll give authority to the beast, and there'll be one mind. And then the Bible also says about people having the nature of brute beasts. And I think, and I hope I'm wrong, but I think that a lot of times those kings and queens are in NATO countries, Western Europe, and they team up with the United Nations and the United States, and now it's becoming more very militaristic. It's becoming like, and I hate to use this expression, gang warfare, mm-hmm. like when it happened in the Persian Gulf in Iraq, and I certainly wasn't the Saddam Hussein. I think he deliberately set his people up. But still in all, when you think of 15, and the whole war was the war against Saddam Hussein. That's all you heard. But nothing happened to Saddam Hussein. But
well,
the,
I've got... All right.
But the people were devastated.
Yep.
15, 20 countries ganging up on one country, Mr. Bell.
All right, thank you. I've got a couple things to say about that. I did see the 60-minute piece on Saddam Hussein, his double, and was is it Saddam's son and his double? And they told the story of the son who goes out and roams the streets of Baghdad for women. And when he finds a woman that he likes, as in the case of a honeymoon couple, he, according to that program, has the husband beaten or shot, takes the wife away to his hotel room, and rapes her, and then instructs his goons to go out and run her over with a car. Now, I sat and I watched that, and I thought, my God, debauchery at its greatest. But how does that differ marginally from this story we're getting from Los Angeles this morning? Does anybody want to comment on that? Horrified as I was at what I saw Sunday, is it really any more horrible than what is going on right here, right now? Do we separate ourselves from Iraq that easily and say, they're so bad, we're so good, are we? Or is it a universal quickening? Stay right there. We'll be right back.
Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Charlie, Lebron, California.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say these end of the world nuts that you've had on lately are really starting to irk me.
Well, they've always
Bible, these Bible thumpers who, you know, if they think, if they're so excited about the end of the world, why don't they all get on a cliff and jump up, jump off the cliff and see God as much as they want? It absolutely makes me sick to my stomach. In a sense, they're right. You know, everybody, most of the people listening to your radio show, yeah, the end of the world is going to come in the next century because probably 99% of the people listening to the show are going to die sometime in the next century, probably relatively early in the next century.
Well, that'll be the end of their world. But look, Charles, you know, there really are, aside from what you're saying, and I know how you're coming at this. You hear the story out of L.A. this morning?
What story out of L.A.? No, I didn't hear a story out of L.A.
Really?
But whatever. Here's the bottom line. You know, we could go either way in the next century. But the next century is not going to be for us. It's going to be for our children. And the thing about it is man has one great weakness, and that is he tends to give in to fear and ignorance. Just like some island guy, he'll see it snowing on the island and an earthquake on the island, and rather than deal with the problem, he hides and says, the gods are coming to get me.
Mm-hmm.
We need to put aside our fears and realize that if it's going to be the end of the world, there's nothing we can do about it, fine. But we ought to start thinking forward for our children. That's moving forward and doing the things that we need to do. And I think these Bible thumpers look toward the end of the world, and you listen to these people. What do they talk about? They don't talk about the things that we can do to make the future better. They don't talk about where we can go with science. They talk about who's going to be saved, who's not going to be saved,
Charlie,
where you need to go to at the
Charlie,
end of the world.
Charlie, I don't think that science is necessarily going to make the world socially better. Nor do I necessarily accuse science, as many do, the Unabomber, for example, for being responsible for the world's ills right now.
I agree with that. Science is not the total answer. That's true. But we need to look for answers. And when we talk 99% of the time about well, the turn of the century is going to be the end of the world. We're not talking about answers. That's what the problem is. These nutsos who talk about the end of the world, they're not discussing answers. They're discussing what am I going to do when the world ends, not how I can stop the world from ending.
Right.
In other words, their total philosophy is lost.
Let me, Charlie, slow up a second. Let me read you something. I want your reaction to this. Just sit there for a second. There was a story that began breaking last night out of Los Angeles. It involved some people, two men. It was thought last night, two Latino men, early last night, who broke into a Hollywood Hills mortuary. They first reported, as I said, there were two Latinos. Now, KMPC reported in the last hour that one is named Gonzalez, obviously of Latino extraction. The other looks dark, but his name actually is Brandon Christopher. Brandon Christopher, the grand nephew of Warren Christopher, the Secretary of State. It is alleged these two broke into the Hollywood Hills mortuary, stole some computers and related equipment, but before they left, they had sex with two of the dead bodies. One woman in a casket was 45 years old. The other in the preparation room on the table was 75 years old. And there is no law against having sex with the dead in California. Now, how do you deal with that story, Charles?
It's a terrible story. Although human beings have been doing weird things for thousands of years, and I'm sure some humans have been having sex with other dead people. But I would say that if you look at, we've gone forward in some areas. For example, we don't practice slavery anymore, and unfortunately, we've gone backwards in some areas. That's true, but I don't think you can garner up all this and say that the end of the world is coming.
I'm just observing. Or this story, Charles, also in this morning, in the Sacramento Bee, about a 6- and 7-year-old. A 6-year-old and 7-year-old were in a fight over a Barbie doll. These little girls. One said, I'm going to kill you, went into the other room, got a steak knife, Charlie, and plunged it into the back of the other girl.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, I know where you're coming from, but we have this unreal belief that in the olden days or back in human history, everybody was kind and good. Human beings...
No, I don't think that's right. In other words, there has always been some debauchery, there has always been a problem, a social problem, but it has, I think, without a doubt, arguably grown profoundly worse.
Well, I think you can argue that both ways, but certainly.
Let me hear your argument go the other way.
Well, let's put it this way: you can go back in history. The first girl executed was 12 years old when she was executed for killing. I think it was an Indian girl, and she was executed for killing a 7-year-old white girl. And you can find acts of butchery and barbarism throughout American history, such as the time that we were burning people for being witches, such as American slavery, which was probably one of the most brutal things practiced, the wiping out of the Indians and the wiping out of the Aztecs. Human history, if you look through human history, it is full of absolute barbarism. That's part of human nature. But humans also have another side that I think we're forgetting. And as we go into the next century, One of those sides is going to take over. Maybe you're right, and it's going to be the barbaric side, but it also could be the positive side, and that is that human beings also have this power to adapt to new things and to change. We no longer practice slavery. We no longer burn people at the stake, at least in most civilized countries. And so you know, we could go either way, and I think that we need to start getting off the negativism and start working on some of these social problems that we have. Just because we have serious social problems doesn't mean that that society is about to collapse.
All right, Charles, thanks. I am actually slightly cheered by that. It's true that there has been barbarism in humanity ever since we've been here. It does seem as though there's an awfully big rash of totally irrational barbarism and debauchery and all the rest of it at the moment. So I will consider that, but I really think that from my cat seat, sitting here dealing with the news day in and day out over now greater than a decade, I'm here to tell you I believe that it is worsening. I'm here to tell you that it is my observation, truly, folks, that it is not getting better, that it is, in fact, getting worse. In a lot of ways, I would like to apologize to the audience this morning. I really have been in a very melancholy, reflective, almost depressed mood. And you will hear that from me from time to time, and I guess I'm not going to hide it. It is not my nature. And I am a little bit up and down, and that is the way I do this program. I'm not going to hide it. I could artificially come on here and, mock up anything, if you follow me. I could kind of hype myself up, and I could even do that right now. I'm capable of it, but I'm not going to do it, ever. And that occasionally is going to result in your hearing me sound a little more vulnerable than a lot of talk hosts might allow themselves to be on the air. I can't do it. 5 hours is too long. It can't be faked. We'll be back. This is Coast to Coast AM.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Now see, this cheers me up a little. This is a new piece of bumper music that I found yesterday, that I remembered yesterday. You know what it is, don't you? Huh? It's Diamond from Hot August Night. And it is hot. Good morning. Good to be with you. Very good to be with you. Even though it's been an abysmal night, in my opinion, in a lot of ways, really abysmal. I've just been in a foul mood. And it's the news. It really is. I can't handle. This happened to me one other night about, how long ago did this, you remember the night the Susan Smith thing happened? I went into such a funk over that. And this feels just like it. It's, you know, the stories that I've got here are so depressing about, you know, Charlie was right about one thing, and that is that I'm 50. I don't know how old you are, from your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, whatever. The children will go on. But what I see occurring with our children right now gives me more than just a little bit of pause. Doesn't it you? Do you think they're going to make it? Is it just too, you tell me, what do you think? What do you see? Are today's children slipping into an abyss that we have created? I don't know. Trying to figure it all out. People having sex with the dead. Kids killing each other. Mothers throwing children out of windows. Families going down alleys and being shot dead by gang members in L.A. You know, it all sort of fits together. And maybe I shouldn't be fitting it together, but it does. Or at least it is hitting me that way right now. I will go into my desert, stare at the stars, and contemplate greater things when I'm off the air here. That's what I'll do. That always helps. And if you want to know, that's one of the reasons I'm out here. There is a closeness that you can feel to God, our Creator. And boy, you got to know, I'm really not a strictly religious, you know, I don't go to church on Sunday. Ever. But you feel that you can feel the creation around you here where I live. It's one of the reasons that I am here. And it helps. It will reset me. And I need some resetting at the moment. Okay, here we go. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. Art?
Yes.
I can't believe I got you.
Well, you must believe it, and you must turn down your radio.
I turned it off.
All right, good.
Where
are you?
I'm in Spokane.
Oh.
Art, I am a pastor.
Well, ma'am, you're on the wrong line.
I am?
Yeah, see, you're on our East of the Rockies line. And Spokane is west of the Rockies, isn't it?
No, I don't know for sure.
You know what, I'm not positive. I'm pretty sure you are. Well,
I thought it was east of...
Really?
I thought.
Spokane actually might be. All right, well, I'm not going to fight it. Anyway, go ahead. You're a pastor, you say?
I'm a pastor.
Uh-huh.
And what I've heard tonight is what scares me. It makes the hair curl on the back of my neck.
Yeah, I bet it does.
Because I have heard so much blasphemies, and then they wonder why we're in the condition we are. That's exactly the answer. I mean, you know, Art, if you have never eaten ice cream, you'll never know how sweet it is, will you?
Right.
Well, it's the same way with the Lord. If you've never tasted of His love, you'll never know how sweet it is.
Well, thank you, ma'am. Look, I really honestly appreciate your words, but I appreciate your words, and I know that you feel that, and you have that, and I don't. And so, I don't put you down, I don't put religious people down, but I also don't embrace it. I'm sorry, I wish I could. I'm as sorry about it as you, and it causes the world to want to reach out and save me, but I'm the kind of guy who's got to put my hand on everything that I can then say, yes, I believe. Or, I have faith. And I know that when I get in this kind of mood, people want to reach out and they want to save me and they want to help me. It's a natural instinct for anybody who has faith. And I appreciate that, but I've got to come to it myself if I ever am too. I cannot be brought to it. Much as those with faith wish to bring you to it. This has to come from within me if it's ever going to occur. And I'm not exactly sure that it has helped by listening to the kind of things that I've, you know, the kind of stories that we've been covering this morning. It just makes me sick. That's all. Is this what a creator intended for mankind? To have little children, little girls, stabbing each other? So that we might grow into a point where mothers will throw their little children through windows without even bothering to open them? To where people will break in to steal something and while they're at it, and oh, by the way, have some sex with the dead people. Yes. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
This is Craig from Anchorage, Alaska.
Hi, Craig.
Kill this thing.
I had a great show tonight. I just had to call you, first time caller. And I just had to call you considering the subject and all.
Mm.
And I am a Bible scholar, and you had some questions about the end warnings and people predicting the time, and I'd like to reply to that.
Don't quote scripture.
Right.
Okay.
I'll paraphrase much as I can, but...
Well, you're going to have to do that, period, or else I cannot continue. So if you can paraphrase, we can continue. Otherwise, I'll have to go.
Okay. Well, it was a parable, and that is when the man told his disciples that when you see the leaves are budding on the fig tree, know that the time is near.
Well, I don't have fig trees here.
And
we grow a few pines, that's about it.
Well, what he's talking about is the warning signs, and we will not know the day or the hour, but the signs will be evident.
Well, so you got figs up there?
No figs, just the signs of the time.
Signs do seem evident, don't they?
Yes. And I wanted to talk to you about your quickening. About the time you come up with that.
Imagine this, sir. Imagine this, that there really is no God, and that we are just sinking into a social abyss which has no end, and that is the true hell.
If there is no God, then the Christians of the world are the most pitiful for putting a faith in nothing. But the way my philosophy is if religion helps you live a better, productive life, then you know, what the heck?
I absolutely agree with that, and I didn't mean it to sound like I believe there is no God, because I actually do believe there is. Sometimes it's harder to believe than other times. When you are a student of the news and of social occurrences, on some days it really is a lot more difficult to believe than other days. But imagine the horrible future for our children and their children if this social deterioration simply continues without end. Well, I suppose there is an end, a horrid end of some sort, propagated by man himself, if something doesn't change. But imagine if the process would simply continue to quicken. Imagine that. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. First of all, I'm calling K-Ram St. Louis. I've got something else to say after this. K-Ram's got a new satellite switching equipment, so we've been having some problems like fade out and, you know, dead air and little commercials popping out, and you know, so they're trying to fix. I wanted to tell the St. Louisans they're trying to fix the new switching equipment, you know.
Sure.
And they'll have it all figured out. So, see, KRM is computerized, they said.
It is.
They're going to fix it, and we'll be okay. Otherwise, you're not right now. You're coming real clear. You know, I called them, and they brought an engineer in, I think, to fix it, and I think they're going to make it. You know, fix it permanently.
I'm sure
they will.
Yes,
okay. Ma'am. Can I say something, you know, about, you know, our government's scary right now, our world, our weather. Everything's scary to us because everything's happening. It's just like blowing up, you know, blowing up in our faces. We're not used to this stuff. And
I'm not. I'm really not this kind of thing.
No, I mean, everything is that, like, God depopulates the world by natural disasters. We don't need a Cairo conference. I mean, God will take care of these things, you know, earthquakes, and
here's
he
something,
does it himself.
Here's something to think about. If there is no God, and mankind continues to slide into this abysmal black hole that he seems to be going into right now, what was it they once said about nuclear war? That the living would envy the dead? Well, maybe it will not take a nuclear war for the living to envy the dead. Do you follow me?
It is a night for dark thought.
But the news is really provoking it. I mean, this story from L.A., this is the worst yet. And I, as long as I've been in talk radio, and we're talking a lot of years now, I have not seen it this bad. Really, I haven't seen it this bad. This last year has been the absolute worst. Maybe from a talk radio point of view, in terms of provocative topics, it's the best. But believe me, I could live without it. We could do plenty of good talk radio and not have to talk about things like people having sex with dead people. God. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Radio Free America.
Good morning.
Well, you might want to read the book of Jonah, see what's going on in this country. Maybe we can save it if we, you know, start to realize. And there's a difference between right and wrong, and it doesn't take a genius to figure it out. We've got another story down here, Art. This is kind of, you might find this funny.
Funny?
Oakland Raider guy and a San Diego Charger were at a sports bar last weekend, and they got into a fight, and the Oakland Raider fan bit off the Chargers fan's earlobe. They reattached it, but
you're kidding.
I found that a rather disgusting story, true. But yeah. I wanted to
Wait a minute.
Yeah?
The Oakland Raider bit off the Chargers' ear?
Earlobe.
Earlobe?
Yeah, and they reattached it.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious. Unbelievable, isn't it? Well, see, you're a Raider fan, so I say that with a grain of salt, so to speak, you know.
Oh, my God.
But anyway.
I'm a Charger fan, too.
I've got a solution to the welfare problem.
Yeah, what is that?
All right. Now, if you're going to get welfare, you have to turn in your TV. Okay? And also, what happened up in L.A. Yesterday with the kid getting killed.
Yeah.
You know, it does. You know, I agree. We'll incorporate your ATF into getting those gangs. Of course, you know, they're not going to be going after a church this time.
Yeah.
And we'll get them to get. All they have to do is get the leader of the gang.
Uh huh.
The leader of the gang will turn over the person that did it.
Uh huh.
And then we'll hang them at the nearest shopping mall. We need to bring back the rope art.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it'll work.
Would you like a trial first?
Oh, yes. Oh, excuse me. That is a very important, small detail I left out.
I see. All right. Thank you very much for the call. I'm glad that you chose to add that at the end. Welfare. That's not a bad idea. I like that. If you're going to get welfare, you have to turn in your TV. Now, if that were the case, how many people do you think would turn in their TVs? Of course, with the amount of welfare they get, they could go out and buy a new large screen color set, so it probably wouldn't work.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from September 20th, 1995.
Back to the lines, west of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Yeah, well, maybe I can cheer you up a little bit here.
Let's hear it.
Well, first of all, I think that, you know, I mean, there's been some bad news and stuff, but what got you down was this inevitable aspect to what your guest was saying. And
he was coming at it from that direction, it's true.
Yeah.
But you know, then it got backed up by all these signs, you know?
Right, but once we get in a mindset of, oh, this is inevitable, and then we start seeing these things, you know, and we can forget. How about all the people who get up every day and do good things? You know, like, look at the bombing in Oklahoma.
The bombing in Oklahoma. Oh, there's a guy who got up and did a good thing.
Right, but how, that was one person or a few people. How many people
Thanks, you're really
cheering
really
me up. Did good stuff there?
In, of course.
After the fact.
Of course, that is true.
Most people are good. Most people are kind and decent.
Right, right, right. But the worrisome thing is the percentage of people actually willing to do what I would call evil things
right.
is increasing at an exponential rate at the moment. And that's,
well, that's
that is
thing.
What I see, and that's what depresses me.
That's the other thing I wanted to talk about here. And that is, have you read the book, Generations, the Future of America?
No.
You might be familiar with the concept. It's the idea that each generation is a certain type, and it repeats in a cycle, like the GI generation had been generations like that before. But the boomer generation, your generation, my generation, is a kind of a generation, an idealistic, value-forming generation. And that we go through these cycles, and that we're in a similar point in the generational cycle as we were in the 19-teens, just before World War One. And it was a time when things looked bad, but it's not necessarily inevitable. It's a cycle that will move through this, and that there we'll have more times where things will be good again. But it's just a time where there's an upcoming generation that has been a depressed generation, Generation X. And so there's just depression going on here, this hopelessness.
Well, you know what really makes me feel hopeless sometimes? It's not what the adults are doing. It's the increasing debauchery of the young, even the very young. And it's the kids who clobbered the family, shot up the family in L.A. the other day.
Right, right.
It's people allegedly having sex with the dead, my God.
Yeah.
Mothers
yeah.
throwing kids through windows, this sort of thing. It's increasing. Now, there's no question about it, and I hope you're right. I hope it's a cycle, but it seems to me like there's less hope for the next generation based on what I'm seeing right now. Would you argue with that?
I would. I think that this generation that seems so debauched,
yes.
that seems so valueless,
yes.
they're actually the ones who are going to be the Bogarts. They're going to, when they get to be our age, they'll be the rough, tough, cynical people who will know how to get the job done.
Well, I hope you're right. Thank you very much for the call, and I sincerely hope you're right, but I worry you're not. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Betty from Leavenworth, Kansas.
Hi, Betty.
I just got in on the last half hour of Mr. Wilson's comments. I need his telephone number. I got the first set of digits, but that's it.
I don't have it in front of me right now, dear. I'm sorry. But I will drag it out, and I'll have it for you tomorrow night. How's that?
Okay, but also I wanted to know, have you been getting callers saying that they've been disconnected by the phone companies?
All the time, yeah.
Huh?
All the time.
Oh, okay. Well, I just thought it was something new.
No, it's the, you know, aren't you sorry we broke up the phone company? And yesterday, AT&T broke themselves up three more ways.
I know. Now what's next?
I don't know. When the phone company's gone, nearly all hope is gone, ma'am.
Isn't that right? Yeah.
Listen, you're the last one on tonight. You get the honor of saying goodnight, America.
Good night, America.
From Kansas, Dorothy Country. Well, that was one of the cheerier calls all night long. Good night, America. God bless the phone company.